So hello again and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel, the podcast where two best friends and comedy writers ask each other questions and give each other answers. I am one half of that podcast, author of How to Fight Presidents, staff writer for Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, and endless seeker of the most comfortable bed, Daniel O'Brien, joined as always by my co-host, America's last warrior poet, Mr. Soren Bowie. Soren, say hello.
Hello, everybody. I'm Soren Bowie. I write for American Dad. I'm a father. I'm a husband. I'll say it. I'm an ex-adventurer at this point. I would say retired adventurer. It's sad to admit. I used to qualify myself as like, no, I'm pretty adventurous. Like, I'll go and do fun stuff, find lost cities, that kind of thing. I think that period of my life's over, and I'm willing to say it.
That's heartbreaking, and I've been thinking about your old job recently at, was it justtrails.com, or was there a family of outdoorsy websites that you wrote
yeah,
for?
Yeah, they're kind of like a family of them.
Yeah, I was just thinking about, like, as I'm getting older and living more life and trying to codify more and more what I want, like what brings me pleasure and joy and happiness. And I think about what a fun run, like the reverse of your career would have been, where you did a whole bunch of comedy stuff early and made like an unimpeachable comedy resume. And then it was like, all right, now my job is full-time traveler and like reporter on travel things.
Yeah.
It seems like it would have been a pretty good deal.
I guess it's not completely out of the question. It's like a lot of the risks that I used to take, though, I'm realizing now it's not conceivable with children. I remember my dad going through like basically the same thing, where he used to be on mountain rescue, which really just meant like body recoup. Like, they would go up into the mountains and like go find people who had been in plane crashes or had gotten themselves stuck somewhere, and generally those people don't survive much for very long. So you're just going up there and grabbing bodies. And it's not a super safe job because you can get stuck up there too. Like, my dad's bivouacked on the side of a mountain before and had to sleep in the snow and stuff like that. And then he stopped, and I was like, why did you stop? And he was like, I can't do it with kids. At this point, it's reckless for me to be doing that with children, because now you have people who need you. And then you start to realize how valuable your life was to you before, like, well, I shouldn't say valuable, how nice it was before, when your body didn't have any value to you, when you were just like, I will throw this thing at anything, and you were allowed to do that, and it was exciting. Thanks to Skillshare for supporting Quick Question. Skillshare empowers you to accomplish real growth. Do something today you couldn't do yesterday with classes designed for real life. Skillshare is an online learning community with so much to explore, real projects to create, and the support of fellow creatives. Explore your creativity at skillshare.com/QQ and get a 1 month free trial of premium membership.
Thanks to Raycon for supporting Quick Question. Get crisp, powerful beats at half the price of other premium audio brands. Raycon's offering you 15% off your entire order, and here's what you've got to do to get it. Go to buyraycon.com/QQ. It makes me think of, this is a person with the opposite trajectory. It's this guy, Kevin Corrigan, who was a writer.
I know him.
He was a couple years older than me at Rowan, where I went for my first year. And I never met him personally, but like I was a fan of his writing in Rowan's comedy magazine, or Alt magazine, which I think was called Venue, I'm not sure. And then years later, it so happened that he ended up at College Humor when I ended up at Cracked. And we started a relationship based purely on that. It's like, hey, New Jersey guys, Rowan University, comedy websites, we are friends now. This is networking. And he did great stuff at College Humor for years, and then was one of the many victims of like the great digital purge of comedy professionals in the early mid 2000s, I guess. And then he like moved to a mountain place and just started a job writing and reviewing like different trails and different hiking and camping equipment. And I, as a younger and stupider person at the time, I thought, man, there's no way that's going to approach the thrill of comedy writing. And he has never looked back, and he's really enjoying it. And now, I get so incredibly jealous of people who seem to just be like full-time YouTubers who like review camping stoves. He's like, yeah, we spent the day with three different stoves camping in the Appalachian Trail, and like we rolled this one down a mountain to see if it held up, and it did. That's my job.
I was only sort of briefly aware of him, certainly in my peripherals, when we were working at Crack, you know, because I always look straight ahead. I'm never like looking side to side, see who my colleagues are. And he was, I barely knew him, but I know him a lot better now because he's, well, for a while he was just writing for Climbing Magazine, and then he became the editor, I think. He's a digital editor, so he's the editor for the online version of Climbing Magazine. And Climbing Magazine is like a very prestigious magazine, something that we would read a lot in high school because that's where you see what all the cool guys are doing. You see like what routes they're setting and like what are sending and what the new stuff is. And now he writes for it, and it's like, I'm like jealous. Like, oh, I didn't realize that was a career, that was an opportunity. I could do that.
Yeah. Well, good for him.
Yeah.
Good for anyone who's living their dream. I don't know. I don't want to end on too down of a note there, because I'm also very happy doing what I'm doing.
Yeah, I guess I am too. We'll get into why I'm so bummed out. It's not a really good reason, but I am mad right now.
Oh, let's talk about that first, then.
All right. Well, as you know, on this podcast, I talked a big game about my upcoming episode.
American Dad, Scottie Pippen.
Of American Dad. Scottie Pippen's going to be in it. And
I love anyone listening to this show for the first time, inexplicably, who doesn't know who either of us are and doesn't know what American Dad is and thinks you're writing on a show called American Dad, : Scottie Pippen.
It should be called that. That's how much he's in this episode. He's playing himself. He's so funny in it. And he's, I don't want to give away too much, but like he's like he's trying to sell his books, and he's a political thriller writer now. And he writes a lot about submarines. He's kind of like a Tom Clancy now. And
yeah. Playing very much against type.
Yes. And it's a very funny episode, I think. And Fox or TBS, they said, we want to wait on it. And the reason that they want to wait is, I mean, like a very good one. But I'm still upset because now I look like a fool for advertising it so much. I was on Twitter. I was on all the social media telling people, hey, I'm very excited about this episode. Scottie Pippen's in it. This is a huge dream of mine. Every kid I knew who had a best friend who was a little bit better than them got to play as Michael Jordan, and you played as Scottie Pippen. So please understand where I'm coming from. And and then the episode didn't air. And I think a lot of people were like, what? Well, not a lot of people. 12 people or so were like, well, what the fuck? I thought you said this was coming out. And
it's very, it's sad and funny that like in all of your tweets about this, you also tagged Scottie Pippen. So even though, even if he's like completely aware of how, business works and how like network programming works and how nothing is ever guaranteed with these schedules, it still really looks like you fucked up somehow. Like this kid Soren, who was talking all this shit, tagging Scottie Pippen in it.
It looks like one of those kids in your school who's just a big liar, and they had like one big one that they're hanging it all on, and everybody's just sort of waiting for this thing to come around. They're like, no, my dad knows Sylvester Stallone. He's coming to visit us. He's coming for Christmas. Just wait. And then all the kids are just like waiting for Christmas to roll around, and Sylvester didn't come. And like, I fucking knew it.
Yeah. And the kid is like, no, it's still happening.
All right. Sure.
Can't wait to meet him next Christmas.
Can't wait to meet Sly. So anyway, this episode's coming out, but it's a TBD situation. You won't be able to see it. It's in Canada.
I was going to ask sincerely if you have every confidence that the episode will air, or did you, I don't know, I'm putting it on you. You didn't like write yourself into it and then get me too'd. There's nothing that's going to get this episode pulled. Definitely, right?
I mean, I can't say for sure what the future holds, but that's not the plan right now. And the episodes cost a lot of money for them to make, so I can't imagine they would just hold this forever. And as far as like what people have told me, what showrunners stuff have told me, they're like, no, it's a great episode. I shouldn't have put the no in front of that. They did not say, because no, Soren, it's a great episode. Like, I'd come to them, like, tell me I'm good. They just accepted it was good.
I'm very excited about it because I, like, for years, and I don't know what this says about our crop of comedy writers, but Scottie Pippen has been a funny comedy specific to pull for years. Like, it's just like, it's irresistible to bring up Scottie Pippen to me. He's always a very funny reference. And like, I've seen him referenced on 30 Rock too, and other like comedy shows, other comedians will bring up Scottie Pippen, not in a way that they're mocking him or anything. It's just for whatever reason, there are some people who just like feel like inherently good comedy polls, pop culture specific to bring out. And he is one of them. And it's like, yeah, it's great that you got to do like the Scottie Pippen episode. That's huge. He's having a moment right now because just had this great profile come out. He's got a book coming out. He's on a lot of podcasts lately. And it seemed like times were great for like the definitive Scottie Pippen comedy entry into the Scottie Pippen discourse that has been happening without his control. And I'm bummed that we don't get to see it immediately. Yeah. And also like, cause you've said it's good and you've never said anything is good.
That's true. I usually have a
all
very
of your other
time.
Episodes, like in your voice have just been, I think the nicest thing you've ever said about them is that they're finished. Which is how I feel about every script I've ever turned in. It's like, well, I can't do it anymore. Yeah. It's done now.
They won't let me work past this certain date, so I guess it's going to be on TV. Yeah, no, I've never been secure in anything I've written. Until it's done and people have say that they like it, and then I'm like, yeah, maybe it is good.
Yeah.
I'll let them talk me into it. Yeah, no, that's how I think that's probably how all writers feel.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody. Every human was born to create. That's a pretty big statement, right? Well, think about it. If you think, I'm not the creative type, I don't know. You are creative. There's different aspects of your life where you are just exploring that creativity. And Skillshare gives you an opportunity to do that with brand new fields that you've never considered before. Whether you last picked up a paintbrush yesterday or in grade school, or you want to explore your creativity with cooking, or you want to explore your creativity with gardening. Hey, gardening, we could be buddies. Skillshare is an online learning community that offers membership with meaning. With so much to explore, real projects to create, and the support of fellow creatives, Skillshare empowers you to accomplish real growth in whatever field you might be interested in. And hey, even the fields that you don't even know that you're interested in yet, you could find on Skillshare. Browse through all of their classes and see what you might like. For instance, I've been recently using YouTube Success Script Shoot and Edit with MKBHD. And that's taught by Marquise Brownlee. And I like this class a lot because it's not something I thought I would ever be interested in at first. In the same way that I will watch a video of how to dry age a steak, I love watching how to make a great YouTube video. It's something we used to do, but I was sort of hands off with everything except the acting, as I've talked about frequently on this podcast. I wouldn't know how to even begin to edit a video. And this class is a great way they start from the very beginning to show you how to do it. And I love watching that kind of thing and just getting to know a new skill. Whether you're a dabbler or a pro, a hobbyist or a master, you're creative. Discover what you can make with classes for every skill level. Skillshare is also incredibly affordable, especially when compared to the pricey in-person classes and workshops. An annual subscription is less than $10 a month. That's it, to learn something brand new, to learn 20 new things. $10 a month is nothing. Explore your creativity at Skillshare.com and get a 1 month free trial of premium membership. That's 1 month of a premium membership at Skillshare.com/QQ. Well, should we get into the show?
I don't have a question for you, but I can talk for a while. I know you like that.
I love that. Hold on. Is this going to be a story where I'm gonna put my head in my hands and be like, Dan, you can't do that? Or is this...
Possibly. I'm hesitating telling this story because it forces me to join or to add to discourse for a community that I don't feel qualified to represent. It's a spiritual tonal cousin to a story I told years ago where a man in a bar saw me wearing a pride hat, assumed I was gay.
Yes.
And I didn't want to deprive him of that notion, which thrust me into... a kind of tourism in the gay community where I got to reap all the benefits of looking like a member of this community that is like is proud defiant, while also knowing at the end of the day I could take my hat off.
Yeah.
And I also wasn't a good faith member of this community. I was just trying to signal that I support the community.
Yeah.
It was a troubling area for me to walk into.
You were thrown into the costume and then you didn't immediately toss it off. You went, maybe I'll walk around in this for a little bit and see what it's like.
And this is a involves a similar degree of confusion, but less. I'm less actively courting it at this point. Let's get into it. I was, as you and some of our listeners know, was recently retired to a very quiet, 1 mile long, quirky little New Jersey beach town that I love to hide it out and hide out in every once in a while.
Yeah.
And so I was just there, living my life. I got a free bedroom because there aren't a lot of like good one bedroom places here. And it's I always like the idea of like, hey, I have this beach town. If anyone wants to come and visit, like my parents stayed for a day, my brother and sister-in-law stayed for a couple of days. And I just like having the option to like open my doors to people. But for the most part, it's one person and a dog in a three bedroom house.
Holy
a few blocks
shit.
From the beach.
I didn't realize how big it was.
Yeah. It was great. Way too much room for me. And it's again, a very small town. And everyone's pretty nosy there and mostly knows what everyone's doing. But I mostly keep to myself because that's my resting state. I like being part of a community. I liked sitting on the porch or the balcony every day, saying hi to the neighbors and chatting and like saying hi to other dog walkers. I liked going for my runs every night and waving at other runners, doing the thing that you do. And I enjoyed being like perfectly pleasant to anyone I met. It's a town where like everyone wants to talk to Jackson. He's a cute dog. And like, this isn't New York where people all have headphones in and keep their heads down. Like it's a very chatty, fun town. And I thought I was doing a reasonable job being a part of this community, saying my hellos and whatnot. And then one night, a woman who lived a couple doors down from me fully sprinted after me and like tapped me on the shoulder and called out to me while I was on my porch. And I had my it's like 9:30 at night. I had my earbuds in and I was like, bah! I like thoroughly spooked by this woman. And she was like, I live down the street. What's your deal? And I was like, start over. She was like, no one knows who you are. And,
oh no,
we don't know what you're doing.
Oh,
here.
We,
yeah.
Oh, they're talking about you.
And yeah, and me and some of the other neighbors have been trying to figure it out. We call you Quiet Guy, and we all want to know what Quiet Guy's up to and why you picked this town. And it wasn't like it was, her tone was not aggressive, as hard as that is to imagine. Her tone was more like, I'm a type A person who gets to the bottom of things. I'm sick of sitting around on porches trying to figure out what your deal is. So I'm going to ask you point blank at night on your porch what your deal is. And I was like, oh, well, just as a starting point, you could tell the people who are wondering what Quiet Guy's deal is that maybe he's just a quiet guy who doesn't want to be disturbed. But beyond that, I don't really have a deal. I'm not that interesting. I really like this town a lot because it's quiet and I like the beach. Like, I promise you, it's nothing more simple than I like privacy and the beach, and this town affords that. And there's like a lot of quirk and a lot of charm. It's all Victorian houses, so it's like a beautiful place to walk around in and exist in. And like, you have to trust me when I say I'm not any deeper than that. It's good weather and cool looking houses. And she was like, nah, I think there's something else. Those guys across the street, they were convinced that you're gay, but I don't think that's what's going on here.
What?
And that was the thing. Yeah, that's a lot of... That paints this town in a little bit of a more negative light than I'd like, because I don't think... Insofar as no broad stereotypes are perfect at summing up any community, any group of people, anywhere, I think none of my behavior fit into what you would consider existing pop culture stereotypes. Like there are awful behavior patterns invented to sum up a group of people, and again, those aren't perfect, those aren't representative, but I didn't fit into any of those things. It's very, to use like dated pop culture polls, any like 90s gay best friend in a movie or TV show fits pretty much the same mold.
Yeah.
And
there's an archetype. There's a clear gay archetype in pop culture.
Yeah. And I don't think any of my behavior fit into any of that, which was a very strange thing. It's like no one would think, who's this guy? He has a dog, he goes fishing in the morning, and he runs at night. You know, like gay people. It's just like not a pop culture stereotype that I've seen before. And I was trying to figure it out. And I think, and this is what makes the town look more small-minded than I'd realized when I first started going there, is I think they just decided there was an otherness to me because I was a person who lived alone in a three-bedroom house and I wasn't partying and I didn't have a family. And I was polite and sat on my porch reading from my book or my computer every morning, and I hung out with my dog and I went for my runs and cooked good food, and that was it. And they were like, they just thought that doesn't fit our understanding of what this town is for. There's an otherness to this person. What else do we know is other? Oh, gay. All right. And that's sort of where the speculation stopped, was like, this thing is different. This thing is also different. Let's remove nuance and just assume that they're the same thing.
Yeah. It's not great, but I think it's possible that they're not the, it's not that much of an A to B connection for them. I think that it could be that they see a guy who is quietly content with being single. Like, that he's not actively pursuing anyone in this town. So, like, there's no desperation about you. And they're like, what? And so, like, they're trying to figure out how you could be content and be alone.
Yeah.
And that's like a, it's an, you know, in the, even the 80s, 70s or 80s, there's like a confirmed bachelors. And people would just be like, well, that's a confirmed bachelor just means they're gay.
Yeah.
And it just means when you're quietly content and it's somebody who doesn't want to answer a lot of questions about that kind of thing or be out because that has a lot of ramifications in most places, right. Especially small towns. And so that's, I could see where that thought process might have come from. I mean, I don't want to defend these people, but
no,
I get it.
Also, completely separate from the gay speculation, which is just one side of this whole thing, I was really of split minds about how much I liked having an air of mystery about myself, because you know me, and I think our listeners will confirm this even if they've never met me. It's not that's not a look I can pull off, really. I've never been able to, like, I've never in my life been intriguing at a party. No one has ever wondered what my deal is. So the fact that, like, the neighborhood had gotten together and was like, he went fishing for a second time this week. I saw him at the farmer's market twice. It's like, great. I've never been known to leave puzzle pieces. So the fact that people are trying to figure me out, that was at one time thrilling, but then at another time also, which is much more on brand, very invasive to a degree that I didn't like.
Well, because you didn't plan it.
No.
Had and you orchestrated the puzzle pieces, you'd have been pumped about this circumstance. But
right.
Because you were just going about your life, you're like, no. Please stay away. I am. This is the Bruce Wayne side of me. You don't
right. talk to me. The only, like, epilogue is that the woman who spooked me at my porch, we went out the night after that. Not in a romantic way, but it was like this town has a cute little festival almost every weekend in the summer and a bunch of weekends in the winter. And this weekend was no exception, where it was like, yeah, they're having community night. There's going to have, like, games for kids and food trucks and other, like fair community bullshit. And she was like, I don't think you should go to that alone. I think we should go to that together. And so we did. And then we walked on the boardwalk for like 2.5 hours. And she just, like, told me history stuff about the town.
Is she nice? Is she cool?
She's very nice, yeah.
And
she was still trying to get down to the bottom of the mystery of why I specifically like this place. And the thing that we kept coming back to was her sincere belief that I was interesting. And my, like, dedicated position that I'm not.
Yeah.
Which is a thing I think is still very true of me.
God. I mean, I know exactly how that conversation happened, too. You without realizing it, you made other people's relationships stronger.
Because all right.
I'm sure these people sitting at home with COVID, not with COVID, sitting at home during COVID this whole time, finally they get a chance to go back out and see each other. Like, somebody was over at somebody else's house. They're drinking. They're having a good time. And they're like, hey, have you guys noticed this guy that's in town? Like, doesn't talk to anyone? Yes, quiet guy. Yes, I know. Oh, God, quiet guy. And then they were like, then they all got kind of riled up and they were excited. At some point, you know, someone floated the idea of serial killer. Somebody was like, new guy in town, doesn't really interact with most people. He's here like finding his serial type. That's what he's doing. He's perfecting his craft. And then they got a good laugh out of that. And then that
keeps to himself and gets on a fishing boat is way more Dexter than standard homosexual behavior.
Absolutely. And then at one point she in the middle of like her final glass of wine, she was like, I'm going to ask him. And they're like, don't. And she's like, no. I'm going to ask him. I'm just, one of these days, the next time I see him, I'm going to find out what his deal is. And, and then, you know, that's why at the worst opportunity in which she saw you, it was the only opportunity she saw. So she was like, well, this is it. I'm going to go ask him right now. And then I'm going to bring this back to the group.
She did say at one point, she said, I was originally just going to go knocking on your door one day, but then I saw you walking down the street. So that's when I figured I would just chase after you. I'm like, man, knocking on my door would have been so much fucking worse.
Yeah.
That would have really, really sent me into a panic attack because I was not expecting anyone. And like Jackson would be barking. It would be full nightmare for me. I'm glad you just sprinted after me at night.
God. Yeah. I'm sure that's how it was. Yeah. I was like, I'm going to ask him. I'm going to go over there right now. I'm going to knock on his door and ask him. Like, please, Kathy, it's 2 a.m. Don't go over there, please. And somebody else is like, do it. And like, she's like, no. And she like is on her way out the door. And at this point, it's pageantry. Like she's putting on shoes or flip flops. And they're like, don't. And she doesn't do it. But in her mind, she's still thinking, I'm going to cost that guy. Find out what his deal is. And then like bringing that information back to the group must have been the biggest social currency she'd ever had.
Yeah. I wonder what if it was like news and surprise. It's like, so get this, quiet guy's name is Daniel.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
Never would have, that was not on my list.
I'm really curious what she chose to be fascinating enough that she deemed worthy for the group. Like what little tidbits she brought back to them. Here are the things that you need to know about him. And they were like, oh my God. Because I'm sure that there are some that you accidentally spilled. And she misunderstood. I'm so jealous that I don't get to do that.
I also think like by virtue of this will sound like more of a flex than it certainly feels, but by virtue of like Googling me after you meet me, that will make the story more confusing. I don't want to say interesting, but like I insist that I'm a quiet, mild-mannered person. And then if you look me up online, it's inescapable that I have 80,000 people who follow me on Twitter and some 12,000 that follow me on Instagram and like a Wikipedia page that was put together by someone else. There's no denying that that's going to, you'll have to go back to the detective board with all the red twine and like start from scratch.
I think a lot of things lock into place with that information because other people who are very reclusive are writers and they're like, they'll see that you wrote a book and they'll be like, ah, okay, this is it. It's somebody who's gone to a quiet town, quiet bucolic town, bucolic? Town to
Quiet Buckles.
Quiet Buckles
quiet,
town.
Quiet Chris Buckles town.
Shout out to Chris Buckles. Quiet little town to write his next American novel. And that feels like it could lock into place for them. What I'm curious about is that how that will influence the way that they interact with you. Like if they're like another drinking party, I'm assuming they're all drinking.
Yeah.
And one of them's like, what if we're characters in his next book? And then playing into that, like, they don't know that not a fiction writer. They don't know that you're not writing a novel about this town. And they're just deciding, well, if I'm interesting enough, I will make the cut.
If you guys had just done a little bit more digging, then you would have learned that's completely unlikely. And what's more likely is I'm going to fucking embarrass the hell out of you on my stupid podcast. That's what you should have been worried about. This guy you never met is going to call you Kathy and do an impression of you.
Not to make assumptions either about your heterosexuality, Dan, but is she like your age? Is she cute?
She is not my age. I think she's very attractive, but she's not my age.
Okay.
There was one other. Well, there are a couple other. Like to continue the. Let me track this down. The woman I rented the place from, she also lived next door to that place, so I talked to her every day, and she was sweet and a doll. And She emailed me when we were figuring out security deposit stuff to return that, and said, the door is always open here if you want to come back. And it was a pleasure having you stay at my beach house. So many of my neighbors have mentioned to me how great and interesting you are. And another encounter that I had with a different woman down the street, she had like her whole family was staying at this beach house, and she stopped me when I was walking in the daytime, which is better. And she was asking me lots of questions about myself in very much like in a New Jersey mother sort of way, where she was just like trying to get as many details on me as she could, because she had her younger daughter on the porch and her younger daughter was single. And I know this because for a while her mom was mouthing the word single over and over again. And like, it was clear that it was just for me, and the rest of the people on the porch weren't supposed to know. But I'm not in the business of keeping other people's secrets. So I said, ma'am, I'm so sorry. I can't read lips. I know you're trying to tell me something private, but I cannot read lips. Which is true. I didn't know what she was saying.
Oh, I thought that was a pretty good bit.
And then she said, you can't read lips. Like, she mouthed, you can't read lips. And I think with context, I put that together. So I said out loud, no, I can't. And then she said, liar. It's like, well, I see that it looks like I can read lips now. But I promise you I can't. You're saying your daughter is single. That's very kind. I have to go now. Oh, and the only other time I ran... I'm starting to see now why I had a reputation for being interesting, because I ran into this woman again at night, and she saw me. I had Jackson off the leash, and I will occasionally... When I first got him, I briefly entertained the idea of training Jackson in a mix of Spanish, Italian, English, and complete gibberish, because it was important to me that we have a connection that no one else can match, because no one else will ever be able to communicate as effectively as he and I. It's an insane thing to do. And part of that is sometimes I call him Pokey, which is a nickname, and he was getting away. So I said, oye, Pokey, aquí, which is, yo, Pokey, come here. And this woman saw just that snippet, and she said, you speak Spanish too? And then she jumped into fluent Spanish.
Whoa.
And I had to be like, ma'am, I'm so sorry. I don't. It's just like those four words and a couple others. I know that it seemed like I had trained my dog in Spanish, and I know it seemed like I read lips earlier when I said I couldn't, but you gotta believe me. I'm just weird and stupid.
You're a spy to them at this point. And I don't know how big Hazlitt was, but you gotta understand, when you live in a small town, like, you know everyone's, you've dated everybody, you know, like, what the pool is like, and then somebody new enters, and everybody is abuzz, because they're like,
yeah,
oh, some fresh meat, like, there's somebody new here. And that's why this woman was so, like, desperate to pawn off her daughter to you. She was just somebody brand new.
Yeah.
And how exciting that is. And they're just like, they want the answers to be weird and mysterious, but they want them to be, you know, good answers. They want the, like, they don't want the, oh yeah, he moved here because he wasn't allowed to be around children anymore after what happened up in New York. Well, I feel badly for them, I guess.
Yeah. It's tough because, like, the town, apart from that interrogation that, like, paints an inescapable picture of what kind of people we're dealing with, the town, for being such a small town and being a classically religious town, is incredibly progressive. There's a lot of gay people there. It's for all intents and purposes, from everything that I've seen, seems like a very tolerant place and very pleasant place. That's why this was such a shock to me.
That they laid it on gay.
Yeah.
You know gay people. There are gay people here. Yeah. Here's the other possibility, is that it's somebody in that group when they were all drinking that is gay. And they're the ones who floated the idea first. They're like, mm-hmm. I think he's just gay and he's still in the closet.
Oh, that's possible.
I don't know.
Well, I'm sure he's listening now. So, no, man, I'm sorry.
Nobody's going to find this podcast. We'll know if they find it, because suddenly we'll have 15 listeners instead of 12.
I have sprinted into enjoying the outdoors this summer, fishing, kayaking, running, and hiking, and I have had my wireless earbuds in for all of that to create a clear, crisp soundtrack for my life. Whether it's for work or play or a bit of both, a lot of us are going to be on the move again this summer. That's why we've teamed up with Raycon and recommend their wireless earbuds. You will get 15% off your entire Raycon order at buyraycon.com/QQ. Whether you're listening to Jukebox the Ghost or Olivia Rodrigo or this very podcast, a pair of Raycon wireless earbuds in your ears can make all the difference. You get crisp, powerful beats at half the price of other premium audio brands. Raycons look great and feel even better. They come in a range of cool colors and with customizable gel tips included for a comfortable in-ear fit. And Raycons are built to go wherever you go with quick and seamless Bluetooth pairing and a compact charging case. My favorite things about Raycon have got to be the 24-hour battery life. That's very important to me. And they're so portable. That's great, too. They're an absolute must-have for my daily grind as someone who is active, constantly running, and never wants to be bothered. Raycon's offering 15% off all their products for our listeners, and here's what you've got to do to get it. Go to buyraycon.com/QQ. There, you'll get 15% off your entire Raycon order. And it's such a good deal, you'll want to grab a pair and a spare. That's 15% off at buyraycon.com/QQ.
Well, I have a quick question for you, Dan.
Go for it.
But I'm going to tell you a little story first, and then I'm going to ask it of you. I went home to Colorado. Speaking of small towns, I went home to my hometown of, well, when I grew up there, it was 8,000 people. Now it's probably closer to 15 or 20. But went back home for a week, hung out at my parents' cabin where I grew up, and had to go through a bunch of old stuff and throw it away because my parents were just sick of holding it. At a certain point, you know, like growing up to be 18 or 19 before you go away to college, you accrue a lot of bullshit that is very sentimental and important to you, and then you leave and forget about it completely. And then I get to come back, and it's very novel to go through it all, but a lot of it's just junk. But I did find some of my old notebooks and opened them, read like the basically read dates, and then decided if it was ever worth reading. And so my question to you is, I know that this is oftentimes a moving target depending on how old you are, but right now in your life, if you look back at your old writing, what's like, how far back will you actually go before you're like, no, anything beyond this point will just be embarrassing and dumb?
So just at first glance, there is not a thing in college that I can ever read again. And I know that because I guess my first, so there's two parts of it. My first cracked articles I started writing when I was in college, and they're just bad because they're bad. And I've learned more about comedy since then. But everything else that is not for cracked that I wrote in college is completely off limits to my eyes, because it was when because I'd always been writing to entertain myself and my friends through school for as long as I can remember. But college is when I decided maybe I'll try to be a writer. And immediately a switch flipped in my brain, like I think it does for a lot of young writers, where it's like, okay, now that I've decided to be a writer, I guess I should write about like divorce and drug addiction and dying.
Yeah.
Because those are serious topics and that's what writers write about. I'm going to ignore my 15 years of experience making my friends laugh with funny essays in class. That's not serious stuff. That's garbage. And now I'm going to write exclusively about trauma that I've never experienced. So there's
other people's trauma.
Yes. A whole lot of stuff in college that I've written that was meant to be serious. And at that time, serious truly just meant like this person's an alcoholic, or this person's cheating on this person, or this person is caught up in a gang. And I can't look at that again because because what could it be, Soren? What could I be saying about heartbreak at 19 years old?
Right.
What could I be saying about a marriage falling apart?
How could you read it and not be like tearing apart whatever couch you're sitting in with your other hand?
Yeah.
Like the fingers of your hand just be like cringing.
I know if I read it, then I won't be able to write anymore.
It's so deeply humiliating. I opened a notebook, and the first line I read was, I think it said, It's a fascinating thing when a young man comes home from college, if you can call it home. And I was like, oh no. And shut it immediately. I shut it. And I was like, I just can't. And I threw it away because I was like, there's nothing I will gain from this. I will only be worse for having read this. And I know at the time I was writing it thinking, worst case scenario, I should be writing down the things that I feel the strongest because those things matter, and like trying to like get to the bottom of them and trying to figure them out. Best case scenario, I'm sure, was when I'm a famous writer, someone will come back and find these after I've drank myself to death or whatever a writer does, walked into the sea with rocks in my pockets. Mm-hmm. And someone will come back and find this stuff and find solace in it and like try to piece together who I was. And so you're writing now for an audience, same way as you, where like before it was, you're just writing sketches in Spanish class or whatever to try and make everyone laugh. And then at a certain point, you're like, what if I was a real writer?
Yeah.
What if I'm Camus? And like, and you just start like writing in this, you start using kind of like purple language, and you get very excited about the prospect of being a writer and like what that means and like what, how serious you should sound and how earnest you are. And, that stuff is just rough. It's rough to go back and visit.
Yeah. I want to be on the record here that if I ever die tragically at a period of time that someone would deem too young, a way to honor me is to not publish my unpublished works. I forbid it. I'm saying now, don't do it. Even like a vanity project, don't do it.
Never has a dream vanished so quickly for me than when Kurt Cobain's Notebook came out, when people published like Kurt Cobain's writing, just his scrawls and stuff. And I don't know who would have even done it, if it's Courtney Love is involved somehow, or like one of his old notebooks became published material and they didn't edit it down or anything like that. And as a kid, I was like, yes, at some point someone will do this with my things. And then within like 5 years, I was like, please don't ever do that. The point of like the things that I've put out into the world, I put them out on purpose. The things that I did not, don't read those. Like that's, I have not worked on it at all. That's just crap.
They're for no one to look at. I can't throw them out because that's how my brain is shaped and I'm not going to look at them. But like, don't. I understand that it would make sense for me to throw them out, but I'm not going to do that. Did you throw out your notebook after reading one sentence from it? Or
that one I did because I'd forgotten it existed. So I had like a period of about 3 minutes where I wasn't sentimental about it anymore because I'd forgotten it existed. It embarrassed me from sentence one and I didn't feel any sort of sentimentality about it. And so I immediately tossed it.
Yeah.
I know somewhere in my house I have letters that I wrote to my future. Well, I wrote to my future adopted son or daughter because I didn't want to like put a curse on myself or like assume that I at some point I will have a kids. And so I know that I've written letters to them, and I hope to find them before they do so that I can destroy them because I'm confident that there's nothing good in there.
That's got to be difficult because if you take yourself out of the equation, you have to know that it would be an enjoyable find for one of your kids.
Yeah.
Like, even if it's clownish and you're embarrassed by it, it's still, they must really want to read that.
Yeah.
But too bad. It's not their call.
I just know this shit's not polished. When you write a joke, or when we used to do stand-up, and like you're writing a joke, you have the kernel of the joke at first, but it's only funny because you know that it has the potential to be funny. But what you write down the first time is not funny at all. And if that becomes the thing that then you're like, that's presented, I mean, you can never do that joke again.
Yeah.
It will never work because now it's out in the world and it's half-baked and you fucked up. And I hate to think that there's that stuff in there that someone would ever read that they're like, oh, he never did anything with this.
Yeah. I'm so mortified about a play that I was working on for so many years in college that was about a relationship that I never lived through, but still was like, I want to talk about like serious heartbreak the way that I think Last 5 Years talks about serious heartbreak. And I'm going to do it. I'm not going to just write a story, and I'm not even going to just write a play. I'm going to write a play within a play where the writer is a character, which, you know, first of all, Daniel, fuck you. And one of the people that the writer had the relationship with is playing herself in the play version of the play. And so the whole thing takes place as a conversation between the guy writing about the play and the people who are in the play. And I want to time travel and be like, hey, buddy, just write like a play first. Just like before you try to invent a new genre about a subject you don't know anything about, maybe write like a short story about growing up in New Jersey. Just try that. Just prove that you can do that.
Right, get a foundation first, and then you can start breaking the rules. Yeah, I know that the first short story I ever wrote in high school, there was a creative writing class that I didn't get to take. Like, for whatever reason, there's these electives, and like, I wanted that class, but it was full up. And so I went to the teacher privately, and I was like, if I wrote something, would you be willing to read it? And he was like, yeah, absolutely. Because a kid showing interest in anything is like good for a teacher. And I wrote that. Wrote a short story about being an old person in a senior living facility, just sort of like all these people staring at the doors, waiting for someone to appear at the screen who they knew, and thinking, I've nailed it. I've nailed the condition of being 80 years old. They're so lucky to have me. And then it took him a very long time to read it. And I think what happened was he read it and went, oh, God damn it. I don't know how I'm going to talk to this kid about this, and just put it off. But I know that story
is somewhere. It's not even like, I can't even tell this kid that it's just bad. I have to also explain to him how passion is not a substitute for talent. This is like a life lesson. This isn't just about grading a paper. This sucks. I got to turn some lights out.
There was a really nice moment when I was going through all my stuff and found some old 3.5-inch floppies that had, I know they had a bunch of old writing on them. And I was like, well, there's no way for me to even access these. So in the bin they go.
The only things that I ever like of old writing, because like to college is one thing where I don't want to read any of like the serious chapter of my life. I also have a difficult time reading old cracked articles, not just because the site is dog shit, but because you think probably.
Wait, hold on. You should pause to say that when you say dog shit, you mean the layout.
Impossible
of it.
To navigate.
Yes.
It's an impossible to navigate website. I can't find anything. If you look at my archives, I think the first thing that is credited to my name is a Agents of Cracked live blog.
Yeah.
It's just what a devastating representation of a decade of my life. Anyway, I can't read any of that crap anymore because I probably wrongly assume that I've gotten better every year, because I know that that's impossible, but there are some, I see a lot of try hard elements in some of the earlier stuff. And I see a lot of like the targets I chose are just not targets I would choose. And the language I use is not language I would use. So like there's a general, I feel like I've outgrown stylistically and content wise some of these articles. But one of the things I'm learning is like, the age that becomes embarrassing me, that changes every year. It's around 26 right now. And it was 24 a few years ago. There was some like 30-year-old Daniel who was like, 24, that's embarrassing. But these next 2 years, these are solid. This is. And now at 35, I'm like, no, you're missing the mark there too, buddy.
Yeah. Thank God I got it now. Thank God that I finally reached the age where I do understand and I'm very smart and I know all of the things.
The only things that I ever appreciate are things with no context whatsoever. Like when I go through a notebook that has a very dumb concept in one sentence, or like, hey, just FYI, Milfneck is a good name for a town in New Jersey. I'm like, yeah, that is. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll use Milfneck, New Jersey one time. That's going to end up somewhere.
I can go through it. So when I used to do camping trips, I used to keep a journal just when I did the camping trip to kind of like log what I did that day so that I will remember, we went to that lake. Oh, yeah, we did this. We found those waterfalls. And that stuff I can go back and read easily because there's no ego in it. Like there's no part of me that's trying to be a writer in those. And there is some stuff like old journals and things that I can go through and find stuff that is me trying to work through something, but work through it earnestly. Like I can go through stuff from 2006 and see how scared I was to be, not know what I was going to be doing in the future, not know if like what I was doing was right. And some of that's really interesting. It's like a nice peek back. But if I could go back and just tell myself, like, stop trying to write and just say something, like, just say it as easily as you possibly can so that I can come back and explore this.
Yeah.
Because that's valuable. But yeah, man, the minute I start trying to be charming or like clever in it, it's just so bad.
I mean, sometimes I like the charm and cleverness, because even though this falls outside of the window of good writing I've ever had, my book, How to Fight Presidents, available anywhere books are sold. They're like, at a core level, the idea of celebrating presidents broadly and celebrating the reckless masculinity of them specifically, as a concept, has not aged well, and I don't love that. But every once in a while, I'll look at a chapter of that book and go through it, because I've never since handed into the publisher, is not like something that I do. Reading it over and over again is not a pleasant experience for me. But I look at a chapter every once in a while, and a thing I've noticed about me writing in 2012 versus me writing the last few years is, like, I wasn't the most efficient writer or the cleanest writer, but like, you can tell I'm having fun doing that. There's like, in a way that I would probably edit out today, I'm still looking at it, I'm like, you're just having a little blast. It would have been cleaner if you picked one joke instead of four alts that you included all of them. But like, you enjoyed this process.
Yeah, a little jealous of your past self. Oh, look at how much you liked this. You just sat there for 45 minutes and came up with different jokes for the same line for no reason.
You tickled yourself for how many euphemisms for big dick you could have. Look at, what are you, being cute? Fuck you.
That's the nicest thing my mom has ever said about my writing, by the way, is, you seem like you're having a lot of fun when you're doing it. Her harsher criticisms have been things like, well, you know, I'm not your biggest fan.
It should not be looked at as a positive thing, where the way that I self-review my early writing is the same way my parents reviewed my early basketball playing. You're having so much fun. You're trying really hard. It looks like you're making friends.
That's what's important. Oh, God, that's great. Well, I think we can wrap it up here, Dan.
Yeah, this was a pretty good episode. Sucks we have to keep recording.
I mean, yeah, but I mean, you're sort of showing everyone how the sausage is made at this point. That we don't just do one and then we are spent for the week, and then we do another one next week.
No, I know our audience thinks like we only record this when we're absolutely inspired, when we have just too much to say. Then like we fire up the microphones, middle of the night, doesn't matter. Wake each other up because like a story needs to be told. But yeah, sorry, sometimes we do these like 2 in an afternoon.
So we don't have to talk to each other for another 2 weeks. On Twitter, you can follow Daniel at @DOB_Inc. You can follow me, Soren, at Soren_LTD. You can follow our, what do we call him now? He's a CFO still? You think we call Bacon CFO?
Sure.
All right. You can follow the other guy who's responsible for this podcast at Make Me Bacon, Please. Really, honestly, that's where if you have any questions about the show, that's where they should go.
Absolutely.
Because we likely won't answer them. Quick question. You could follow that on Twitter at @QQ_SorenandDan. That's also a pretty good place to ask your questions. You can email us at QQ@SorenandDaniel@gmail.com. Absolutely the worst place to ask a question. I don't know that anyone has ever checked that email account. But it's nice to know it's there. You can also find and follow and hire our producer and sound engineer and editor at Gabe Harder at GabeHarder.com. We have a Patreon that's just Patreon/QuickQuestion.
There's no .com in there?
Patreon. Oh, I guess it would be Patreon.com/QuickQuestion.
People are smart. People know how to find things.
Quick. It said quick. Kevin was my autofill. Quickly Kevin.
Oh.
So advertising somebody else's show a little bit here.
Everyone check out Quickly Kevin. It's the Kevin Can Fuck Himself After the Show recap show, and it's really great. It's again, it's Quickly Kevin, so it's just like 2.5 minutes long, and the reviews are staggeringly accurate.
It is patreon.com/quickquestion. But I mean, honestly, don't do it. Don't do it. The only person you're paying is Bacon to make this show happen. And at a certain point, he'll say, we don't have enough money to do it anymore. And yeah. I mean, who's really at loss there? We just move on with our lives, right?
Yeah.
Okay, bye.